Thank you very much for coming. When I sat down to think about what topic I was going to give today for the shiur, I had a few choices. One shiur that I was considering giving, I hadn't really begun to work on yet. I had ideas, it was percolating in my mind, but had a lot of work to do on it. And my second option was a shiur that was much more formed and would have required a lot less work. And I was leaning towards that option, but something kept pulling me in the other direction, and I wasn't sure which to choose. Last week, I was in Israel. As part of my job as director of Israel Guidance, I visit seminaries in Israel to get more information about them to help guide our girls where to go. And I was on a bus going up towards the, I guess, the middle of the country or the near Beit Sha'an to a midrashah there. And I was traveling through the Jordan Valley. And it was beautiful. It was lush, and the mountains on the left in Israel and the mountains on the right in Jordan, and the whole area was just beautiful. And I was sitting there on the bus. It was a two-hour bus ride. And I was thinking the entire time how lucky I am to be here and how Bnei Yisrael came out of Mitzrayim and wanted to get to Eretz Yisrael, and they weren't able to. And it was only their children who were able to get to Eretz Yisrael. And as I looked over to the mountains in Jordan, I was thinking how Moshe Rabbeinu was standing there, and Hashem said to him, "Look into Eretz Yisrael. You can see Eretz Yisrael, but you can't enter it." And how Moshe Rabbeinu would have given anything to be able to enter Eretz Yisrael and be where I was right then. And that's when I said, now I know which of the two topics I'm choosing. I'm going to go with the one that needs the more work, that's still in its, you know, forming stages. But for Moshe Rabbeinu and for all those who couldn't enter Eretz Yisrael, that's what I want to talk about today. So the topic I'd like to discuss is unintended consequences. Aaron, Moshe, the Egel, and the Meraglim. And the shiur will be divided into four parts. We'll discuss the Egel, the sin of the golden calf. We'll discuss the sin of the spies. We'll discuss the sin of Meimariva, which was the episode where Hashem told Moshe to speak to the rock and water would come out. And then we'll end with a perush of the Abarbanel on divine justice. On divine justice. And throughout each of the first three sections, we'll examine the sources in Pshat which discuss it, with keeping or with paying certain attention to the involvement of Moshe and Aaron. And we'll discuss certain mefarshim which discuss their involvement as well. So let's begin with the topic of the Egel. Well, first of all, actually, before we get to that, we know that Moshe and Aaron were not allowed to enter Eretz Yisrael primarily because of Meimariva. When Hashem told Moshe and Aaron, or Hashem told Moshe to speak to the rock and Bnei Yisrael will get water, so Moshe went ahead and he took the staff and he hit the rock, and water came out that way. And Hashem said to him afterwards, because of this, you will not enter Eretz Yisrael. We'll take a look at that at the end, but that's where I want to start from at the beginning. So let's take a look at the psukim regarding Chet HaEgel. It happens to be that this coming parsha, Parshat Ki Tisa, this week, we'll be reading about Chet HaEgel. And in the discussion of what happens, let's take a look at the psukim. I'm going to read the bolded ones. I know there's a lot of psukim and a lot of sources here. We're not going to read through all of them, but I'll read through the bolded ones here. Vayar ha'am ki voshesh Moshe laredet min ha'har. And the people saw that Moshe was delayed in coming down from the mountain. Vayikahel ha'am al aharon vayomru elav kum aseh lenu Elohim asher yalchu lefaneinu. And the people gathered against Aaron, and they said to him, "Get up and make us an Elohim that will go before us." Kizeh Moshe ha'ish asher ha'elanu me'eretz Mitzrayim lo yadanu ma'hayalo. Because Moshe, the man who took us out of Mitzrayim, we don't know what happened to him. So first of all, there's a great discussion in the Mefarshim what Bnei Yisrael exactly were asking for. Were they asking for Avodah Zarah, or were they asking for something different? And a lot of it hinges on the word Elohim, which we normally translate as gods, but can also be translated differently. There's a pasuk in Shemot where Hashem is telling Moshe that Aaron will go with him to help him talk to Paro, and Hashem says to Moshe, "Hu yiyeh lecha lefeh, he will be your mouthpiece, ve'ata tiyeh lo le'lohim, and you will be his Elohim, you will be his boss, his master." And so we see from that pasuk, and there are others, that sometimes the term Elohim can mean not a divine entity, but just a person who's in charge. And so it's possible, based on this, that B'nai Yisrael were asking not for an avodah zarah, but rather for somebody else who'd be in charge. Ki zeh Moshe ha'ish, because Moshe, the man, okay, not divine, but Moshe, the man who took us out of Mitzrayim, is gone, and we don't know what happened to him. And so therefore, we need a replacement for Moshe, who again is not going to be a divine replacement for Moshe, but rather another boss, another leader, who can help lead us on the way. The Mefarshim discuss why exactly they made this mistake. Some say that they had counted 40 days and they made a mistake. They knew Moshe was going to come down at the end of 40 days. Some say that they didn't know that there was going to be a 40 days, but they just saw Moshe go up the mountain and they saw that the man was not falling on Har Sinai. And so therefore Moshe was on the mountain. He'd been gone for over a month. Didn't seem to be any food there. And how could he possibly have survived? So in either case, B'nai Yisrael are despairing of the fact that Moshe is still alive. And they come to Aaron and they say, help us. Pasuk Bet, Vayomer Aleihem Aharon, Harkun is mehazahav asher ba'aznei nesheichem b'neichem uvnoteichem v'havio elai. And so Aaron tells them, take off the golden rings that are in the ears of your wives and your children and bring them to me. Vayis parku kol ha'am et nizmei hazahav asher ba'aznehem. Vayavi'u el Aharon. And so they all take off the rings and they give them to Aaron. Vayikach mi'adam vayatzer oto b'cheret vayaseihu egel masecha. And he took it from them and he fashioned it. And there's discussion, Rashi brings two ways of interpreting the phrase vayatzer oto b'cheret, but somehow Aaron fashioned it and he made a molten calf. Vayomru eile Elohecha Yisrael asher ha'elucha me'eretz Mitzrayim. And they said, this is your God, Israel, or these are your gods, Israel, who brought you out of the land of Mitzrayim. Vayar Aharon, vayiven mizbeach lefanav, vayikra Aharon vayomar, chag lashem machar. And Aharon saw, and he built an altar in front of this molten calf, and he said, a holiday for God tomorrow. Vayashkimu mimacharat, vayalu olot, vayagishu shlamim, vayeshav ha'am le'chol v'shato, vayakumu le'tzachik. And the next day the people got up early, and they brought all sorts of sacrifices, and they sat to eat and drink, and they began to have sport. And the Mefarshim say that this refers to adultery and to murder. And the remainder of the story is that Hashem tells Moshe, as Moshe is still on Har Sinai getting the luchot, that B'nai Yisrael are sitting down at the base of the mountain and that Moshe should go down. And Moshe goes down, and when he sees what they're doing and he sees them worshiping the golden calf, he takes the luchot that he just received from Hashem and he throws them down and shatters them at the base of the mountain. And he's very angry with B'nai Yisrael, and Hashem is very angry with B'nai Yisrael. And Hashem tells Moshe that he wants to destroy B'nai Yisrael once and for all and start again with Moshe a whole new nation. And Moshe davens for B'nai Yisrael and convinces Hashem not to destroy them. Moshe gets down the mountain and he says to Aaron, Me asalacha ha'am hazeh, what do the people do to you? Ki haveta alav chata'a gdola, that you brought this great sin upon them. And then Aaron explains what had happened. Moshe understands that the people are stiff-necked and the people are full of many sinners, and he goes ahead and he takes the golden calf and he burns it, and then he grinds it up very fine and sprinkles it on the water, and he makes B'nai Yisrael drink it. And Chazal say that many people died. Those who were guilty died. They drank the water. And then Moshe cries out, Mi la Hashem Eli, who is for Hashem, come to me. And all of Shevet Levi came to Moshe. And Moshe said to them, take your swords and go through the nation and kill your brethren, whoever is guilty of this terrible sin. Again, this is days or a month and a half after Matan Torah. B'nai Yisrael had been at the peak of spirituality when they received the Torah from Hashem. And he spoke to them specifically and said, Lo tiyelecha Elohim acherim al panai. You may not have any other gods other than myself. And now a month and a half later, look at the depths to which they have fallen when they worship this Avodah Zarah. And so Shevet Levi go throughout B'nai Yisrael and they kill those who are guilty of worshiping the Egel. And then the pasuk tells us, and this is the last bolded pasuk on source one, pasuk lamed hey, Vayigof Hashem et ha'am al asher asu et ha'egel asher asa Aharon. Hashem plagued the people because they made the egel that Aaron made. So Chazal say this was yet a third form of death that befell Bnei Yisrael. Again, those who were guilty died in one of three ways. And altogether, about 3,000 people were killed because of the sin of the egel. But one question really stands out, and that is, what about Aaron's involvement? We don't see in here, short of the one pasuk where Moshe says to Aaron, what did Bnei Yisrael do to you that this happened, that you did this to them, or that you made them, you know, that you made this egel? Short of that one pasuk, we don't see any reprimand. Moshe doesn't yell at Aaron, he doesn't blame Aaron, really. He doesn't punish Aaron. We're not told that Hashem is angry at all. When Hashem tells Moshe, I'm very angry at Bnei Yisrael and I want to punish Bnei Yisrael, he never singles out Aaron. So it seems from the psukim that Aaron is not culpable for having helped Bnei Yisrael fashion the egel. Many of the mefarshim actually go in this vein. They all, Rashi in particular. Rashi, who lived in the 11th century, one of his themes that he likes to do is he likes to make tzaddikim faultless, and he likes to show how great they are. And people who are bad, he feels let's let the sin fall on them, or let's show their poor characteristics. But let's show how faultless they are. And so Rashi goes through Aaron's involvement in this episode, and he discusses each piece of it, and the pieces where we might say, well, hey, Aaron seems to have taken the initiative here and maybe was at fault, Rashi explains away. So if we take a look at the Rashi, at the sources inside, in the first source in the Rashi, so this is source number two, Pasuk Bet, when Aaron tells Bnei Yisrael, bring me the golden rings that are in the ears of your wives and your children. So Rashi explains, Aaron decided to do this because he knew that women are very protective of their jewelry. And he felt that if he asked the men to bring them their wives' jewelry, so it'll take a long time. Aaron knew that Moshe was about to come down from the mountain. Aaron expected him any moment. And so Aaron felt that the delay that will be caused by trying to get the jewelry from the women would be enough of a delay to allow Moshe to return first, and then we won't have this problem at all. However, what happened? Instead, the pasuk tells us that the whole nation took off their rings and they brought it to Aaron. The pasuk tells us, and Rashi explains, that the men went ahead and instead of asking their wives for all of their gold, the men were so eager, they took all of their own gold and they brought it to Aaron. So the delay never happened. When Aaron saw what was going on, so he went ahead and he built a mizbeach. And according to Rashi, he said, you know what? I'm going to build a mizbeach. I'm building it for Hashem. It's not for the Egel. It's not for the Avodah Zarah. But I'm going to build it, and I'm going to build it myself, because if I build it myself, I can go ahead and be slow at it. If I ask Bnei Yisrael to build it, they'll build it 1, 2, 3. I'm going to build it myself. I'm going to take my time. And by the time I'm finished, and he said, Chag LaHashem Machar, we'll worship, we'll have a holiday to God tomorrow, Moshe will be here, and it really will be a holiday for Hashem. But that's not what happened. Aaron finished the Mizbeach, and Bnei Yisrael got up especially early. They were so excited. You know how kids on a regular school day can't get out of bed. They're just like sleeping and sleeping. But on a Sunday when they can watch cartoons, 7 o'clock in the morning, they're awake first thing and in front of the television. Bnei Yisrael were so excited to worship this Egel, by Ashkimu, they got up early and they went ahead and did it. And so the delay that Aaron was hoping for, again, didn't happen. Now, Bechor Shur, another parish from France, lived in the 12th century. And this is source number 3. Bechor Shur explains that when Bnei Yisrael came to Aaron to request another Avodah Zarah or another leader, whatever they were requesting, Aaron had a few choices. Either he could say to them, okay, Moshe's gone, I'll be in charge. Or he could appoint somebody else to be in charge. Or he could refuse to get involved. Or he could do something else. Okay, so that's four choices. Aaron decided he didn't want to tell them. He didn't want to appoint somebody else to lead them. Okay, if Bnei Yisrael were asking not for a God, but for another leader, Aaron didn't want to appoint another leader because he felt, if I appoint another leader, and there are many people in Bnei Yisrael who are worthy of being leaders, there's Kalev, there's Nachshon, all of these people distinguish themselves throughout the Midbar, he felt that there would be enough of a faction within Bnei Yisrael who would support this person being the leader, and then when Moshe Rabbeinu would come back down from Har Sinai and be ready to take over and lead Bnei Yisrael, there would be a little bit of a rebellion. And you would have those who would still support the leadership of the new person, and that would cause quarreling among Bnei Yisrael and very likely bloodshed. And Aaron didn't want that to happen. So he didn't want to appoint somebody else. On the other hand, he didn't want to stay and do nothing, because he felt if he didn't appoint anybody, and if they gave them no resolution, they might go ahead and appoint their own leader. And that'll have the same result, only it might even be worse, because you might have some people who want one person and some people who want somebody else, and that would really lead to quarreling and really lead to bloodshed. In terms of the third option, he didn't want to take over himself, because he felt that would be too hurtful to Moshe when Moshe would come back, which left him with one last option, and that's the one he chose. His last option was to delay and make something, prepare something that he could point at and say, okay, this is going to be the focal point, and prepare something which really had no substance whatsoever. And that's exactly what it was, a golden statue, something that had no substance whatsoever. And what he expected was that when Moshe would come down, then the people would automatically just leave it and everybody would follow Moshe again. What he didn't anticipate was that there were those among the nation who were evil to begin with, and that they would start worshiping the Egel immediately, and they would convince Bnei Yisrael to do so as well, and that everything would happen faster than he anticipated, and that all of his plans and all of his delays would be for nothing. And so that's what occurred. He gave the idea to build the Egel. He meant it with the best of intentions, but in the end, it turned out badly. So it's a good question, and some say, why an Egel? So the Mefarshim do discuss that. Some say that Aaron himself didn't know exactly, or didn't fashion it himself as an Egel, but that it was some sort of witchcraft, or some say, Shem Hashem with Micha, that it just caused it to be an Egel. And then Bechor Shor says, but if you take a look at that last line, Pasuk Lamed Hei, Vayigov Hashem et ha'am, okay, Hashem plagued the people, Al Asher Asu et ha'egel Asher Asa Aharon. Aaron's name is mentioned there. The people were plagued because they made the egel that Aaron had made. So Aaron's name, even though we said he did it with the best of intentions, it's still the egel that Aaron had made. And Bechor Shor says, Aaron tried to save them. Aaron meant it with the best of intentions. He said, I'm going to choose to make this Egel. I'm going to choose to make a statue because this way it'll avoid bloodshed among the people and it'll be the best solution. And this way he was trying to save the people. However, it ended up that even this caused bloodshed. And now they were killed because of what he had done. When the Torah discusses this episode in Devarim, Bnei Yisrael are about to enter Eretz Yisrael. It's now about 40 years later, and the majority of the generation that had left Mitzrayim have died. Only the children are left, and they're the ones who are about to go into Eretz Yisrael. And Moshe Rabbeinu is about to die, and he's not going to lead them into Eretz Yisrael. And he has one last opportunity to talk to them and give over any message that he possibly can. And so he goes through the history with them and through their time in the Midbar, and he tries to impress upon them the importance of following Hashem and not falling back into the same mistakes that their parents made. And so he reviews the different sins that happened during the Midbar. And when he talks about the sin of the Egel, he says, Uvechorev, this is source number four, Uvechorev hiktzaftem et Hashem. And at Har Sinai, at Chorev, you made Hashem very angry, Vayitanaf Hashem bachem, and Hashem was angry at you, lehashmid etchem, and he wanted to destroy you. And then he continues talking about it, and he says, Uve'aharon hitanaf Hashem me'od lehashmido. And against Aaron, Hashem was very angry and wanted to destroy him. Va'et pelel gam be'ad Aharon ba'et hahi. And I davened for Aaron at that time. This is the only indication in the psukim that Hashem was angry at Aaron. It's not during the episode itself in Shemot that we find this out. It's rather only in Devarim, when Moshe is recapping the whole event, that we find out how angry Hashem was at Aaron. And there's really no more detail given, only that Hashem wanted to destroy Aaron also, and Moshe had to daven for it. Now Aaron, shortly after the episode of the Egel, becomes the Kohen Gadol. We read about that in Parshat Tetzaveh, that Aaron is going to be anointed as the Kohen Gadol. And one of the jobs of the Kohen Gadol was to effect atonement for the nation. And so really, if Aaron was that culpable, it would be a little hypocritical for him to be the one effecting atonement for the nation whenever they would sin. So we have this contradiction here. On the one hand, Aaron HaKohen was a tzaddik, and we know how great he was. On the other hand, we see his involvement and what his involvement caused and the terrible sin that the Egel was among Bnei Yisrael. And we see this last pasuk in Devarim, that Hashem was angry at him also. And so we have to make sense of all that. We're going to leave that for a little while, and we'll come back to that at the end. Let's go now to Chet HaMeraglim, the sin of the spies. The sin of the spies also is mentioned in two places, in Bamidbar and also in Devarim. In Bamidbar, it's told as it's happening. And there Hashem says to Moshe, we take a look at the bolded psukim, Vayedaber Hashem el Moshe lemor, Shlach lecha anashim v'yaturu et eretz kena'an asher ani notein levin Israel. Hashem says to Moshe, send spies, send people, and I want you to spy out the land of Canaan that I'm going to give to Bnei Yisrael. Ish echad l'matei avotav tishlachu, kol nasivahem. You should send one man per shevet, and each person that you send should be in his own right a very important person. Vayishlach otam Moshe, and I skipped a number of psukim in the middle, which describe who the people were that were chosen. Vayishlach otam Moshe latur et eretz Kanaan. Moshe sent them to go spy out the land of Kanaan. Vayomer aleihem, aluze banegev ve'alitem et hahar. He said to them, go enter Eretz Yisrael through the south, through the Negev, and go up into the mountain. Ure'item et haaretz mahi, and go see the land. What's it like? Ve'et ha'am hayoshev aleha hechazaku harafeh. What about the nation that lives there? Are they strong or are they weak? Hame'atu imrav. Are they few or are they many? Uma ha'aretz asher hu yoshev ba hatovahi imra'a. And what about the land that they live in? Is it a good land or a bad land? Uma ha'arim asher hu yoshev bahena. What about the cities that those people live in? Are they fortified cities that it's going to be hard to conquer? Or are they open cities and it'll be a little bit easier for us to get through them and to conquer them? And what about the land? Is it a fertile land or is it an infertile land? Are there trees growing there or not? And you should strengthen yourselves, and you should bring back from the fruit of the land. And this is what Moshe told the Meraglim. And they left, and they went throughout Eretz Yisrael. And at the end of 40 days, they returned back to Moshe and Bnei Yisrael, and they brought back their report. And they said, the land is truly a land that is flowing with milk and honey, but the people who live there are very strong. And the nation and the cities that they live in are very, very fortified. And children of giants live there. And the Amalek lives in the south. And other nations live in the mountains. And the Kana'ani live along the sea and along the Yarden. Basically, in every direction in which we would like to enter, there are enemies. And so Bnei Yisrael get very scared. And Kalev tries to calm down the people. And he says, no, we can do it, we can go in. Hashem said he'll help us, and we can conquer them. And then the Meraglim, or the other 10 Meraglim, replied, and they started saying more bad things about Eretz Yisrael. And they said, no, the land that we went and the land that we spied out, Eretz Ochelet Yoshvehahi, it is a land that devours its inhabitants. And all of the people who live in it are men of great stature. And children of giants are living there. And we felt like grasshoppers compared to them. And that's how we surely seem to them. As a result of the report of the spies, we see in Perek Yudal at Pasuk Aleph, Vatisa kol ha'eda vayitnu et kolam. Bnei Yisrael started to cry. Vayivku ha'am balayla hahu. Vayilonu al Moshe ve'al Aharon kol bnei Yisrael. Vayomru aleihem kol ha'eda. Lu matnu be'eretz Mitzrayim o b'midbar hazeh lu matnu. They turn to Moshe and Aaron and they say, we wish we would have died in Mitzrayim, or we wish we would have died in the trek so far out of Mitzrayim until this point in the wilderness. V'lama Hashem eviotanu el ha'aretz hazot, limpol b'cherev, nashenu v'tapenu yiyu lavaz, halo tov lanu shuv Mitzrayma. Why did Hashem bring us to this point only to kill us in Eretz Yisrael? Our wives and our children are going to be prey. It would be better if we would return to Mitzrayim. And it wasn't just words. In the very next pasuk, Vayomru ish el achiv nitnarosh v'nashuva Mitzrayim. They turned to each other and they said, let's do it. Let's do it. Let's appoint another leader and let's go back to Mitzrayim. They rejected the very purpose of their whole exodus from Mitzrayim. Hashem brought them out of Mitzrayim to get the Torah and to bring them to Eretz Yisrael. And now they said, we don't want it. And they're about to turn around and go back to Eretz Mitzrayim. And Hashem gets angry. And he turns to Moshe and he says, this is it. I want to destroy them right here. Just like he said earlier at Chet HaEgel. And Moshe davens to Hashem. And he says, you can't destroy them. And his plea is not as impassioned as it was back at Chet HaEgel. But he davens for Bnei Yisrael nonetheless. And he says, you can't kill them. It's not good for you. It's not going to look good all the other nations. Don't kill Bnei Yisrael. And so Hashem agrees to a compromise. He won't kill Bnei Yisrael, but they're not going to enter Eretz Yisrael. Hashem says, I'm not going to kill them out immediately, but they're going to have to wander for a total of 40 years in the desert. So that's another 38 and a half years. And all those who were adults when they left Mitzrayim are going to die in the desert. And only their children, who are under the age of 20, will be allowed to enter Eretz Yisrael. And everybody, every adult in this generation, will die in the desert except for Kalev and Yehoshua. And that's what Hashem tells Moshe. Now, interestingly, when the story is recounted in Devarim, when Moshe tells it to Bnei Yisrael in Devarim, he tells it in an abridged form, but the beginning of the story is different, and it's significantly different. And if we take a look at source number 8, the first two psukim there, it's Devarim Perek Aleph, psukim Kaf Bet and Kaf Gimel. Moshe says to Bnei Yisrael, "Vatikrevun elai kulchem, vatomru nishlacha anashim lefaneinu v'yachperu lanu et haaretz, v'yashivu otanu davar." Et haderach asher na'aleba ve'et ha'arim asher navo aleihem. Moshe says, you came to me and you told me that you wanted to send spies to go spy out this land and see the way that you should come to the land and the cities that you're going to come to. Vayitav be'enai hadavar. And I thought it was a good idea. But the difference between this and what we saw in the Midbar was who was initiating the mission. Here, Moshe is telling Bnei Yisrael, you came to me and you told me that you wanted to send spies, and I thought that was a fine idea. In the Midbar, Moshe says, Hashem came to me, and Hashem said, I want you to send spies. Shlach lecha anashim. So the question becomes, whose idea was it? If Hashem commanded it, then the very mission itself could not have been wrong. If it was Bnei Yisrael's idea, then perhaps asking for the spies was wrong. And this leads to all sorts of different consequences. So the Mefarshim all try to grapple with this, with these two seemingly contradictory accounts, to explain how did it really happen. Did Hashem tell them to do it, or did Bnei Yisrael ask on their own? And so Rashi discusses this in Bamidbar. And this is source number 6. Rashi says, Bnei Yisrael came to Moshe, and they asked Moshe, we want to send spies. And Moshe thought it was a fine idea. And Moshe went and consulted with Hashem. And Hashem said to Moshe, Lida'atcha, ani eini mitzavelecha, im tirtzeh shlach. If you want to do it, you do it. Lida'atcha, it's your own choice. I did not command you to do this. If you want to do it, go ahead. But I'm not happy about it. I told Bnei Yisrael back in Mitzrayim that I was going to take them to a land which was Eretz Zavat Halav Udvash, a land flowing with milk and honey, a beautiful land, an expansive land. I told them I was going to help them conquer the enemies that lived in that land. They don't trust me. They want to see for themselves if it's really a nice land or not. Okay, go ahead. But I'm telling you right now, I'm leaving room for them to mess up. They want to send spies. If they mess up because of what the spies tell them, it's their own problem. That's how Rashi explains the difference between Bamidbar and Devarim. That it happened first the way it was in Devarim, that Bnei Yisrael came to Moshe and said, we want to do this. And then Moshe went to Hashem, and Hashem said, shlach lecha, do what you want. But the Ramban has a problem with Rashi's answer. Ramban says, if you follow Rashi's logic, then you might be forced to say that Moshe himself was culpable. And I'll give you a little story. When I was 3, I was in a summer camp, and every day they used to give us for snack 2 butter cookies and a glass of milk. And the butter cookies were like these little flower-shaped cookies with a little hole in the center. Very vanilla, plain types of cookies, and I love them. They're my very favorite type of cookie, even to this day. And every day we would get 2 cookies with milk. And one day, the counselors told us that there wasn't enough cookies left, and we could only get 1 cookie apiece, except we were going to go on a walk, a little nature walk through the woods. And whoever walked the entire time and didn't run could get a second cookie for snack. But anyone who ran would only get 1 cookie for snack. No problem, we all left, we all walked, had a very nice time walking around in the woods. And then on the way back, when we were all getting closer to the bunkhouse, we could see it in the distance, so all of a sudden everybody forgot what they had said about running, and a whole bunch of the kids started to run to the cabin and tried to get inside the cabin. And they tried to open the door, and it was locked. And they started banging on the door and banging on the door. They thought somebody was inside. Maybe they would open. And nothing was happening. Now, I was a goody-goody, and I was back with the counselors, and I wanted my second butter cookie. So I was walking. And the counselor started yelling and saying, no, it's locked. You can't get in. But we were too far from the rest of the kids for them to hear us. And the counselors kept, you know, yelling, but clearly the kids couldn't hear. So I turned to the counselor, and I said, should I go tell them that the door is locked? And the counselor said, yes. So I took a step, and then I turned around, and I said, should I run? And the counselor said, yes. And so I ran to the cabin. I told the kids, don't bang on the door. There's nobody inside to open it. Just wait till the counselors get here, and then we'll all go in. And they did. Came snack time. The counselors gave out all of the butter cookies. Everybody got 1, 3 kids got 2 because they had walked, and on my napkin in front of me was 1 butter cookie. And I was very upset. And I said to the counselor, why did I get 1? I was supposed to get 2. And they said, because you ran. And I was very upset. Okay, it's now 40 years later, more than that, and the fact that I remember it shows how upset I was. And I felt, and I think rightly so, you told me to run. I asked. If you felt that it wasn't right, if I was going to be punished for it, you should have said no. But you didn't, and you told me to do it. And so this is what Ramban says about Rashi's answer. If, he says, according to Rashi's logic, Bnei Yisrael came to Moshe and said, this is what we would like to do. we want to send spies, then if it was a bad idea, like Rashi says, if Hashem would have been displeased with it, then it was Moshe Rabbeinu's responsibility to say no. But instead, what does the pasuk tell us in Devarim? Vayitav be'enai hadavar. Moshe thought it was a good idea. So Ramban says, if we follow Rashi's logic, and if we explain those two verses the way Rashi explains them, we might be forced to say that Moshe Rabbeinu himself was guilty. And Ramban does not think that's the case, nor did Rashi. And Ramban continues, and he said, not only that, but Moshe Rabbeinu even told Bnei Yisrael what to look for. Bnei Yisrael came to Moshe and said, we want to go see the land, the way we should enter it, and the cities that we'll come to. And Moshe Rabbeinu said, okay, well, I have a list. Answer all of these questions. And he gave them a whole list of questions. Look at the city, are they strong or weak, the nation who lives there. Look at the cities, are they fortified or not? Is the land fertile or not? He gave them a whole list of questions, none of which they themselves had asked personally. And so Ramban says, if this is how we're going to explain it, if we're going to go with Rashi's logic, then that's going to lead us to the conclusion that Moshe sinned. And so Ramban goes out of his way, and that's an entirely different shir, to explain this contradiction in the psukim and how we can understand what went wrong with the Meraglim without saying that Moshe sinned. None of the Mefarshim say that, as a matter of fact. None of the Mefarshim say that Moshe was guilty with the episode of the Meraglim. And yet, if we take a look a little later on, in Devarim, when Moshe speaks to Bnei Yisrael, again, in his last speech, his last opportunity to tell them and to strengthen them before they go into Eretz Yisrael, and he talks to them about what happened during the episode of the Meraglim, he says, in Pasuk Lamed Zayin, Gam bi hit'anaf Hashem biglalchem leimor, gam ata lo tavosham. Hashem also got angry at me because of you, saying, you, Moshe Rabbeinu, will not enter into Eretz Yisrael. Yehoshua bin Nun, ha'omeid lefanecha, hu yavo shama, oto chazek, ki hu yanchilana et Yisrael. Yehoshua is the one who's going to lead Bnei Yisrael into Eretz Yisrael. And so Moshe seems to indicate himself, although nowhere else is it indicated that Hashem was angry with Moshe for what happened at the Meraglim, Moshe seems to indicate himself when he's recounting the story at the end of the 40 years that Hashem got angry at him because of Bnei Yisrael, and that's why he couldn't go into Eretz Yisrael. Let's talk now about Mei Meriva. Bnei Yisrael, it's at the end of the 40 years, or towards the end of the 40 years, and Bnei Yisrael are getting closer to entering Eretz Yisrael. And Miriam dies, and the Mefarshim say that because she died, or when she died, the well of water that had traveled along with them all along disappeared. And so Bnei Yisrael once again come to Moshe and Aaron, and they start complaining. Legitimately, they need water, but they're asking in the wrong way. They're asking in an angry, complaining way. And they say to Moshe and Aaron, we need water. We'd rather have died earlier. We need water. Why did you bring us into this desert to die here? And so Moshe and Aaron, they don't know what to do, and Hashem starts to talk to them. And if we take a look in source number 9, starting from the bolded psukim, Pasuk Zayin, Vaydaber Hashem el Moshe leimor, Kach et hamateh vehakel et ha'eda ata ve'aharon achicha, v'dibartem el hasela le'enehem v'natan meimav. Take your stick and gather the people in front of the rock, and it will give out its water. Speak to the rock, and that's how it will give out its water. V'hotzeita lehem mayim min hasela, v'hishkita et ha'eda ve'et v'iram. If you talk to the rock, water will come out, enough for all of the nation and their flock. V'yikach Moshe et hamateh milifnei Hashem ka'asher tzivahu. So Moshe takes his staff like Hashem told him to. V'yakilu Moshe ve'aharon et ha'kahal el pnei hasela, v'yomer lahem. Shim'u na ha'morim, ha'min ha'sela ha'zeh notzi lachem mayim. And Moshe and Aaron gather Bnei Yisrael in front of the rock, and they say to them, listen, you rebels, from this rock, we're going to bring out water? Now the Mefarshim discuss what exactly they were saying when they asked that question, Hamin Hasela Hazen Otzila Chamayim. What exactly was the nature of the question? But some say, don't complain to us. It's not us who can do this on our own. You should be davening to Hashem. He's the one that's going to bring the water. Vayarem Moshe et yado, vayach et hasela b'matehu pa'amayim. And Moshe lifted up his hand with a stick, and he hit the rock twice. Vayetzu mayim rabim vatesh ta'ida uve'iram. And water came out, and the people drank and fed their flock. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe ve'el Aharon. Ya'an lo he'emantem bi lahakdisheni le'enei b'nei Yisrael. Lachain lo taviu et hakahal hazeh el ha'aretz asher natati lahem. Hashem turns to Moshe and Aaron at this point and says, because you didn't believe in me to sanctify me before B'nai Yisrael, therefore you will not enter Eretz Yisrael. What a tremendous, harsh punishment. And right afterwards, Hashem tells Moshe, it's Aaron's time to die. Take him to Har Ha'har, and that's where he's going to die. And the Mefarshim all discuss this episode of Mei Meriva. First of all, Ya'an lo he'emantem bi, because you didn't believe in me? We're not talking about regular people. We're talking about Moshe and Aaron. Of all people in the world, they believed in Hashem the most. What does it mean that they didn't believe in him? And lo haktisheni, there are many, many discussions that the Mefarshim have on this topic of what Hashem's criticism of Moshe and Aaron was. But the bottom line is that it's clear in these psukim that Hashem is saying to them, you did something wrong right now, right here at Mei Meriva, and because of that, your punishment is that you can no longer enter Eretz Yisrael. Too late. All of the Mefarshim have different ideas of what could have been such a big deal that Moshe and Aaron did. After all, come on, they just hit the rock. So what could have been such a terrible thing that Hashem had to give them this punishment, that their entire journey, the entire purpose of Moshe to take B'nai Yisrael out of Mitzrayim and to bring them to Eretz Yisrael, he is one step away from the end of it, of entering Eretz Yisrael, and Hashem says, sorry, you lost it. Now you have to hand the reins over to somebody else, and they're going to finish the job for you. The Abarbanel, which is the last source in the sheet, discusses this idea at length in various places in the Torah. And he has numerous questions. Now, the Abarbanel, who lived in the 15th century, the nature of his perush is a little different from many other Mefarshim that we're familiar with. Instead of commenting on every pasuk, he writes it in essay form. So he'll take a topic or a perek, and he'll write a whole essay on it, a whole list of questions, and then after his whole list of questions, he'll go through his whole answer. But if you fall asleep during the questions, you never find out the answer. So Abarbanel has many questions on this episode of Mei Meriva. And some of them are as follows. He says, how is it possible? What was so bad, what was so terrible about this sin of hitting the rock that Hashem punished two Gedolei Hador, Aaron and Moshe, with the extreme punishment of not entering Eretz Yisrael? It doesn't seem like it's a strong enough reason to merit that type of punishment. Number two, like any parent, the best way to punish a child so that they learn from what they did wrong is to make the punishment fit the crime. That's the almost the fairest way, both in terms of the fairness of it, but also in terms of the educational value of the punishment. If the punishment fits the crime, you understand better what you did wrong, and you can make sure not to repeat it. And Hashem often punishes B'nai Yisrael, or punishes people in that manner. Mida keneged mida. The punishment usually fits the crime. Abarbanel says, what happened here? The punishment does not fit the crime here. They hit the rock, now they can't enter Eretz Yisrael. How is that mida keneged mida? That's question number two. Question number three, where's their protest? If it was so unfair, and it really seems so unfair, it really seems that the punishment is so much harsher than the sin which they committed, why didn't Moshe and Aaron right here daven for themselves? They don't say a word. They don't beg Hashem. They don't say anything. Why not? And last, what about those psukim that we saw earlier? What about the psukim that we saw in Devarim, where Moshe says to Bnei Yisrael, it's because of you that I wasn't allowed to enter Eretz Yisrael. But he puts that statement in the middle of the story of the Meraglim. And he puts the statement, Hashem was also angry at Aaron, in the middle of the story of the Egel. And so the Abarbanel discusses all of these questions. And then he gives his answer. And his answer is really revolutionary. He even says, nobody with me has suggested this, and all of the Mefarshim, I'm the first one to say this. He says, if we take a look in source number 10, Ve'omar, and I'm not going to read this whole thing out loud, don't worry. Ve'omar, Sheda'ati bazeh hu she'aharon kedosh Hashem meit be'avon ha'egel. I believe that Aaron the Holy One died because of the sin of the Egel. U'moshe Adonenu meit be'avon ha'meraglim. And Moshe Rabbeinu died because of the sin of the Meraglim. Not that Aaron committed idolatry with the Egel, and not that Moshe for a second believed the report of the Meraglim and hesitated about entering Eretz Yisrael. That was certainly not their sin. But rather, okay, each of them had the right intentions. Aaron really had the right intentions when he had Bnei Yisrael do what they did and fashion the Egel. Moshe Rabbeinu really had the right intentions when he said, go ahead and send spies and look for all of these things and answer all of these questions. However, Abarbanel says in line 3 towards the end of the line, although they had the right intentions, and he's talking about Aaron right here, Hine nimshach mizeh ma shenimshach. What happened from this, because of Aaron's actions, was what happened. He had the right intentions, but there were unintended consequences. Because of what Aaron did, bad things happened. And because of what Aaron did, Bnei Yisrael sinned. And they were punished. And their punishment was that they were killed and they had to die in the Midbar. And so Abarbanel says, about 3 lines up from the end of that paragraph, V'lachein haya mehatzedek ha'eloki. And therefore, it was divine justice. That's the title of this section. Divine justice. Shekemo shehu si beiv ba'anashim haheim sheyamutu bamidbar ken yamut gam hu shama v'lo yikanes la'aretz. Because Aaron indirectly caused people to die in the Midbar, it was divine justice and only fair that he also should die in the Midbar and should not enter Eretz Yisrael. He was the cause of what happened to them, even though he didn't intend it, and therefore he should share in their fate. And then he progresses to talk about Moshe Rabbeinu, and he says the same thing about Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe had good intentions. However, he says in the middle of the second paragraph, V'hasha'elot ha'ele she'sha'al me'itam, the questions that Moshe Rabbeinu gave to them and told them to have the spies look for, Ein safek shehayu l'chavanat tova, l'sameach et Yisrael b'fsarot tovot. There's no question that Moshe, when he told them to find out what the land looked like, was it fertile, was it not fertile, there's no question that Moshe knew that the land was fertile. Moshe Rabbeinu knew that Hashem was going to help them conquer Eretz Yisrael. He knew how beautiful the land was. And Abarbanel explains, and Ramban explains also, that the reason why he asked them those questions was because he knew what the answers would be. He expected them to come back and say, Eretz Yisrael is a beautiful land. Look at the fruit. It's so fertile. And he thought that would excite Bnei Yisrael to go into Eretz Yisrael. However, although he had that intention in mind, Aval nimshach mehem ma shenimshach, the consequences of the questions that he asked was what happened. The consequences were that Bnei Yisrael, or the Meraglim, returned with a report that was negative, and Bnei Yisrael panicked, and Bnei Yisrael decided that they didn't want to go into Eretz Yisrael, and therefore they were punished. And Hashem punished them, and their punishment was that they'd have to die in the Midbar. You don't want Eretz Yisrael? You don't want to go into my land? Fine, you got what you asked for. You'll all die here in the Midbar. And Abarbanel explains, therefore, Ra'ah Hashem Yitbarach, Hayot Moshe Rabbeinu Alav HaShalom, Siba Bazeh B'mikre, שהיה מהצדק והדין הישר שגם הוא שסיבב לא יבוא שמה. That because Moshe Rabbeinu was the cause of what happened to Bnei Yisrael, even though he had only the best intentions in mind, still, because he was the cause, it was divine justice that he should share in their fate and that he also should not be allowed to go into Eretz Yisrael. However, because Moshe and Aaron really did have pure intentions, and because their intentions really were for Hashem's sake, Hashem does not include their punishment with the punishment of the nation at Chet HaEgel and the punishment of the nation at Chet HaMeraglim. And Hashem doesn't mention it in those places, so that we shouldn't include them or think that they were somehow on the same level as the nation. Instead, Hashem said, I'm keeping it inside me, but I have it inside me. I'm keeping it until a later point, and at a later point, that's when I'll punish them. And that's exactly what happened. Came May Meriva, and Bnei Yisrael complained to Moshe that it was because of Moshe and Aaron that they were dying in the desert. Bnei Yisrael, again, we said, they came with a complaint that was legitimate. They needed water, but they complained a little unfairly. And they said to Moshe, "V'lama havetem et kahal Hashem el hanbar hazeh lamut sham anachnu uve'irenu? Why did you bring us here just to kill us in the desert? Why did you bring us here just to die?" And what they mean is, we're all dying here, and we can't survive without water. But the undercurrent is, what has happened to all of us, all of the nation that you took out of Mitzrayim to bring to Eretz Yisrael? It's all been death. We've all been dying. There's nobody left of anybody who is 20 years and over. It's only us, the children, now, and even we're going to die. And so when they came to Moshe and Aaron, and they essentially hinted to the fact that Moshe and Aaron were the cause of all of them dying in the Midbar, so Moshe and Aaron were embarrassed, and they were upset, and they understood what Bnei Yisrael were hinting. And then Hashem said to Moshe and Aaron, go and talk to the rock. And Moshe went, and he said to Bnei Yisrael, Shim'u na hamorim, listen you rebels. And he yelled at them. And Abarbanel says, because Moshe got angry, Moshe, when he heard what Bnei Yisrael said to him, should have felt badly enough, should have understood that he was at fault here. He shouldn't have gotten angry at them. But he went ahead and he got angry and he hit the rock. And that's when Hashem said, now, the moment that I've been waiting for, the moment that I said I was going to bring punishment later, this is it now. Because you didn't react properly now, and because you reacted with anger and didn't do what I told you to do, so the punishment that I was holding back and the punishment that I was keeping inside me all along, I'm going to decree now. And Hashem said to Moshe and Aaron, because of this, now you can't go into Eretz Yisrael. But it wasn't because of this alone. It wasn't that May Meriva was the exact cause, according to the Abarbanel, of them not being able to go into Eretz Yisrael, but rather it was the intermediate cause. Hashem wasn't going to let them go into Eretz Yisrael anyway because of their sins with the Egel and with the Meraglim. And this was the intermediate cause, the straw that broke the camel's back, that Hashem said, this is where I'm going to assign the punishment to you. And that's exactly what he did. I think in conclusion, after we've seen these various episodes, the episode of the Egel, the episode of the Meraglim, and the episode of May Meriva, and Abarbanel's unique approach that Moshe and Aaron were not being punished with not going into Eretz Yisrael because of May Meriva, but rather because of their involvement in Chet HaEgel and in Chet HaMeraglim, I think we can learn two things, two very important lessons from the sacrifice of Moshe and Aaron. And the first one is that no matter our intentions, there are sometimes unintended consequences. And we have to think through all of our actions before we do them and try to, as much as we can, predict any consequences that will come because of our actions and try to make sure that there won't be any unintended or unforeseen consequences. That's number one. And number two, they made a tremendous sacrifice. They weren't able to go into Eretz Yisrael because of a mistake that they made. They had the best intentions, but it didn't work out right. And we should appreciate what we have nowadays. We can go to Eretz Yisrael. We should appreciate what they have, what we have, that they wish they could have, and we shouldn't take it for granted. Thank you very much. Yes. Thank you. I have students who every year now buy me butter cookies at the end of the year.